Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I'm your host, Dwayne Mancini. As always, if you need anything from the podcast or would like to suggest a future guest, please email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. And you can always visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. My guest today is the founder of product, Devin Campbell. This is part one of a three-part series where Devin and I discuss various topics related to product development in the medical device space. In this episode of the podcast, we center our discussion around the importance of voice of customer, or VOC. We have an intro into product and how Devin founded the company, and we discuss who truly is the voice of the customer throughout product development. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy my first discussion with the founder of product, Devin Campbell.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Devin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Yeah, as I mentioned in the introduction and your bio, this is going to be part one of a three-part series of having you on to talk about some various subjects and topics and product development. Let's start off with a little bit of background about you, who you are, your experience, and then also the current company that you're the founder of, Product.
Sure, no problem. In a nutshell, I'm a mechanical engineer. My bachelor's and master's are both mechanical engineering. So I'm an engineer by training, but also by practice. I've been in medical devices since the late 90s. Started off as an individual contributor on a design team, very small design team, who ended up putting out a lot of really successful in vitro diagnostic medical devices. Through that ride with that organization, had an opportunity. We did everything in house, so all design and manufacturing. We didn't put any chips on the floor. We weren't like machining things, but we would then bring everything together and inspect it and assemble it and test it. And sales and marketing and manufacturing and service, everything was under one roof. So it was a great kind of environment for me to grow up in, where as an early design engineer, I had a chance to kind of see everything. And I was not the kind of engineer, and continue to not be the kind of person, who's satisfied with kind of sitting there in my office and having someone provide me specifications. I design the widget to meet those specifications and then pass it on to other people. There's a lot of people that do that and love it. That's great. That wasn't me. I needed to understand kind of the entire picture. So having this great organization that I was a part of, where everything was happening inside, gave me the opportunity to walk a building over and talk to the field service engineers and walk another building the other direction and go into manufacturing and say, hey, I want to spend a couple of weeks here on the manufacturing floor building stuff and learning how you make things. I took those things that I learned in those different, within the different kind of tangential disciplines that are affected by what we do in product development. And I brought that back and helped teach my peers, and not only inform my own designs, but inform the designs of my peers around me. And then I would go back to the same folks and say, hey, Dwayne, you gave me some great feedback 6 months ago. Well, guess what? The new product that we're about to launch, has all these things that you gave me feedback in. Thank you for that. So I kind of demonstrate the not only listening, but then taking action on some of that feedback that I would get. That perspective, that really wide view, and trying to understand the entire ecosystem that I was developing into, served me well, and I was able to grow pretty quickly in the organization and take on more and more leadership roles. Eventually, we sold the company to Roche, and that was a nice acquisition, a nice exit. And by the time that happened, I was in charge of the entire platforms. So not just the engineering, but kind of everything else. is kind of working kind of through me to get some of the new product development and new platforms out into the market. Got poached from Roche by Novartis, their big competitor that brought me out here to the East Coast to build a companion diagnostics business unit. Loved that. Did a lot of due diligence work, learning, looking at other emerging companies and emerging technologies to say, these technologies, can they expose the biomarker of interest that we're trying to utilize or to interrogate for our companion diagnostic? And does the company have some legs beneath it? Does it have a quality system in place? Is the engineering sound? So we kind of go in and do some really deep dive technical diligence for several years, looking at other companies, made a couple acquisitions, said no to a lot more. And then once we got our hands on something, we would then develop our own custom assays and custom software, algorithms and things like that, using those other boxes that we found out in the world. But I am a mechanical engineer at heart. My sleeves are always rolled up, and I'm ready to get, you know, not only in the lab, but in boxes as well. And I wasn't necessarily in boxes there. I was working with other people's systems. So I had an opportunity present itself here in the Boston area to join a startup. Saw a good opportunity there, and did some good work, stabilized the platform, regained customer confidence. It was in a research use only kind of life science tool at the time. And we took that company public at the end of 2017. And then kind of early 2018, I had an exit of my own. And after those two from before, and I had some time thinking, do I want to go back to big pharma? Do I want to go back to, you know, giant diagnostic players like Roche? Do I want to do a small startup again? Do I want to do medium-sized companies? What do I want to do? But I wasn't in any hurry. So I used the time to not force myself into any new role and just kind of let things organically happen. And folks that I know, investors, other C-suite individuals, knew that I had some time on my hands, would introduce me to really early stage startups here in the Boston area. Say, hey, Devin, I want you to go talk to this guy, Dwayne. He's got a really cool technology. Go check out what he's got. There's no way he could afford someone like you, but he needs someone to help bring kind of that experienced product development strategy, because they have no idea what's coming and they need someone just to kind of help them understand. Like, this is what it's going to look like when you try to develop something that eventually has to go through the FDA. So I would meet folks for beers or for coffee or for lunch. And if we liked each other, then I'd sign an NDA and I would come into the lab and start kicking the tires and taking a good look at things. And I would keep giving suggestions and feedback and advice based on what I've seen in the past and horror stories, but things that have gone really well. And they're soaking it up. They're loving it. And I'm doing this for fun. And because it's a tight ecosystem, right? Entrepreneurs and early stage startups, they have really tight networks. And so they'd say, hey, I want you to talk to my friend over here. You know, she started another company and she's got some similar technology. What you're doing with me could really help. Do you mind meeting her? I say, yeah, sure. So we meet for a beer, meet for coffee. We talk things through, and that just keeps snowballing. And eventually my wife points out that I'm working a full-time job, not getting paid anything, but having the most fun I've had in decades. And I've been in the industry for, you know, 21, 22 some years, more than that now. She kind of pointed out, like, you're having a lot of fun. Maybe this is what you should do. So took her advice and started my own advisory firm, and specifically and very focused on to help early stage entrepreneurs, early stage med tech companies, life science companies, biotech companies, build the infrastructure, the scalable infrastructure that they'll need in order to be able to, you know, meet whatever their longer range goals are. So, you know, you're three folks in a PhD thesis. How do you build that into something that's eventually going to go through a 510K process? How do you do manufacturing scale up? How do you do design and development? How do you build out quality systems? Quality is very often a piece of it, but it's not the thrust. And it's been about 3 years now, and it's been crazy fun. Love doing what I'm doing. Love the population I get to work with, and help a lot of really cool people, passionate people, build and develop products that could touch the lives of a lot of people out in the world.
Yeah, and so you're strictly startup emerging technology companies, correct? I mean, it's no big players. Okay, I think it's nice to make that clear distinction, because I talk to a lot of people who are like, yeah, I work with all startup companies, and then they start talking about their clients and they'll throw in like some of the big medical device companies. It's like, yeah, I know you work with startups, but you also have these large companies, you know, probably footing a lot of the bills. But it's just a clear distinction. The other thing you said during your bio, and it has no relevance to medical device, but do you happen to watch the show The Office or have seen The Office before?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. You said you get in there and start kicking the tires. And the only thing I think came to my mind was when Andy is selling his car and Dwight is like outside, like jumping on it in the parking lot. And this is the image that came to my head for whatever reason. I almost started laughing while you were doing it, but it's neither here nor there to medical device. So we'll spare the audience that.
I'm not sure if I'm Andy or if I'm Dwight in that situation, but I guess I'm more Dwight-like.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're Dwight-like. That's just the scene that popped into my head.
In the situation, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So the first part of our series that we wanted to talk about in this product development, small startup company life cycle is the importance of VOC, or voice of the customer, in product development. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing we talked about prior to our call was the stat you had read about the FDA findings. And I think that's a great segue into this. So before I butcher it, maybe if you want to kick it off and kind of tell the audience what you read and how that fits into this.
And I encourage folks to do their own research. Mm-hmm. You know, don't just take me at my word. But if you take a look at findings and observations, you know, it's all public information. You take a look at that over the last decade plus, you see an increasing number of issues that ultimately stem back to human factors engineering.
Okay.
So how the device interacts with the people and the environment, the people in the environment around it. It's an area there's a lot of opportunity for failure, right? Mm-hmm. And medical devices, we try to avoid that as much as possible because failure can have some pretty substantial effects. Sure. So a lot of those issues are related to human factors engineering. Mm-hmm. And if you abstract that just a little bit, you kind of ask yourself, well, why is there an increasing number of issues with human factors engineering? You know, what's going wrong that's happening there? You have to really appreciate and understand the customer, right? The users, and understand the environment in which they work and how they'll interact and how they will use it, not just the patient, but if it's an implantable, like the people that have to install it, if it's an in vitro diagnostic, the people that have to run the test, all of those different aspects come into play. And if you don't thoroughly interrogate the users and operators and key stakeholders that are involved with the successful deployment of the medical device, you're missing out on a huge opportunity to design and develop products that please and delight those stakeholders. And if you want a really successful company and a really successful product, that's what you want to aim to do, right? Really please and delight those customers,
right?
And those end users. So voice of customer is critical. Mm-hmm.
So you're working with a lot of these startup companies, and you must come in at some level and see the neglect. You know, How do you make sure you keep that in mind at all times? I think I can't imagine as a startup company you're intentionally neglecting this. But what are some of those blind spots that they don't see? Right? I mean, it's like when I work with startup companies, you don't know what you don't know, right? So the minute I bring up reimbursement, they're like, "Yeah, I know a CPT code," and it's like reimbursement's a lot more than that. So you know, where do you see those errors, and how do you address those?
Yeah. Specifically for the folks that I spend a lot of time supporting.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not, you know, neglect or purposeful,
right.
You know, malice trying to, you know, cut corners or do anything. It's very much always the case that they've not done this before. Right. So most of the startups that I'm working with and that you know my company aims to help build up, it's a great idea and a couple of inexperienced, passionate people. Mm-hmm. So how do we do that and what is to come? In many cases, I'll get involved in a project where there's already a good working prototype. Right. There's something there. Enough that they've maybe gone off to get some seed funding, maybe an A, but you know, sometimes I'm usually between C and A and maybe B, but that's rare. Mm-hmm. They just don't know. They just don't know any better. And so one of the things I'll come in, I was like, okay, well, let me see your design, your product requirements. And say, oh, well, we have some product requirements. And like, Jimmy's got it over here and Jane, she's got it over there. And Jose, they have it in that pile. And so now you have to like dig through all these different sources to find the design requirements. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's not going to lend itself nicely to a design history file eventually. But once you can gather all of it together, I said, great, well, where do these come from? Right? What's driving these product requirements? This design input, right? If we're going to use FDA terms, where's all this design input coming from? And almost always it's like, well, you know, we talked to a doctor or two. Like, where's that documented? It's not documented. And if there is requirements, they'll only be product requirements or design input. Very rarely will I actually find thoroughly vetted and well kind of thought through user needs, and user needs speak to the voice of customer, right? It is the mechanism through which you capture and communicate the voice of the customer is through those user need statements.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So when you come in to a company, and you see that, you know, do you recommend they go out and talk to more? Like, I mean, what's the number of end users that you need to talk to? I think I'm just trying to think, you know, if this is me, my first time, right? And I've developed a product. It's like, yeah, how do I know I've talked to enough of the end users? I mean, there can't just be like one number, right? I mean, what's the process to arrive at that?
So here's the first thing I want you to do, and this might challenge your concept or your mental model of VOC of customer, mm-hmm. right? You know, whether I'm right or wrong, whatever, it's my opinion, but
sure.
Here's where I want to challenge you. As a product development professional, mm-hmm. as a person who does product development, and as an early, you know, as an engineer that was way upstream in the product development cycle, I think it's important to appreciate the profoundly, let's see, what's the right way to say it? It's this profound responsibility you have to everyone who touches what you dream up in your head, mm-hmm. and create in CAD and then have somebody go and manufacture, or you know, chemistries that you come up with, that you design, that you put together in assays and formulations. All of that, you have this profound responsibility to everyone who touches your product downstream. So I would argue, for the sake of this conversation, let's consider everyone who touches what you come up with after you as a customer.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
So what we're trying to do is break this model of the customer is the person who pays for it, right? Or the customer is the person who uses it, or even that the customer is the person who benefits from it, like a patient.
Right.
All customers, for sure. We need to think about those. But in order to robustly answer that question, what I want us to do is kind of dive into this a little bit and think about these different the ramifications of poor input solicitation and incomplete input solicitation and poor appreciation of what you need to do, affecting all of these downstream customers in your value chain before it even leaves your building or leaves your, you know, gets shipped to the end use environment.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that those are all resources that should be counseled and asked, you know, what do I need to do to make a great product for you? So you're asking, like, how many people do we need to ask? How many customers? I'd say it's like, how many different customer kind of categories we want to talk to, right? Mm-hmm. Talk to the manufacturing teams, talk to the assembly teams, figure out, well, what are the requirements that you guys need of us in order to help you build a robust and reliable and high quality product?
Yeah.
Talk to your quality teams. You know, what kind of documentation does my product need to be able to generate in order for you to do your work? Talk to the field service engineers and say, what kind of features do we need so that you can service it really well, you know, in the field? People call it like DFM, DFX, you know, DFS, you know, all those different DF, you know, acronyms that you can throw at it. I like to think of all of that really as customers that we want those voices captured in mm-hmm. that piece. Then you can eventually kind of work your way out of the building, out of the confines of wherever the boundary is that you've shipped through, and now start thinking through, all right, well, you know, how does it get received at the customer site? You know, is doctors involved? Are patients involved? Well, patients are always involved in medical devices in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And you can think through kind of what you might stereotypically and classically think of voice of customer, right? The person holding the scalpel. Yeah, of mm-hmm. course, you want to get her feedback. But there's a lot of other people that you want to get feedback from as well. I think that builds a robust mm-hmm. and well-rounded feature set that you can then go off and do product development on. So yeah. Very often people will have some of that done. And I'll tell them, because you asked, like, where do we start? I say, hey, you've missed all of these different voices. Let's go ask them, because it's not too late. Let's go ask them for input and figure out how we could adapt and evolve the design that you have so far to better meet their needs as well.
Right. So it's almost like doing like a gap assessment, right? Like you're kind of looking at it, figuring out what boxes they've checked and, hey, these are the ones you haven't checked yet. Boy, that's really, really helpful. Yeah, I have not thought of it like that in that way. I guess I kind of have, but not as the way you laid it out. So that's really interesting. I like that a lot. So the other thing you had mentioned in our pre-call was, what are the numbers? 820, section 30. Yeah. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit about that as well?
Well, I mean, it's not that it's just good. I mean, let's take three steps to get there. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Why should people care about voice of customer and documenting that and getting it?
Okay.
Obviously, customers and patients care, right?
Mm-hmm.
Customers and patients care that you've listened to them and you're designing something that works well for the intended use population in the intended use environment.
Okay.
It's robust, it's repeatable, patients and customers care. Kind of the next step up, I'd say your investors and your shareholders care.
Mm-hmm.
They care because they want your company, from a business perspective, they want your company to be, you know, either drive a high valuation or be able to have a nice return on investment for them, drive toward an exit, or maybe drive toward an IPO. and build out some longevity and have a sustainable business.
So yeah, right.
They and care too.
Right. To add a comment, they obviously care specifically about product development, because I believe you had mentioned that in your bio today, or either when the first time we had talked. I mean, you were getting investors, right, asking you to do almost due diligence. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, I absolutely
yeah.
do.
That means yeah.
One of the things that we do at Product is to engage in due diligence on behalf of VCs looking mm-hmm. to invest in companies. And this is definitely one of the areas that I probe.
Yeah.
To be able to come back and say, yeah, they've got a cool prototype, but it's misinformed.
Mm-hmm.
There's okay. a lot of work here. There's a lot of customer facing, remember, broad term for customer.
Yeah.
There's a lot of customer facing discussions that need to happen to make sure it's a good product.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So investors, shareholders, they care. And then the last one, regulators care. Mm-hmm. And you see that evident in the fact that, like what we talked about before, the number of findings and observations that get out there that are kind of human factors related. And we can tie that back to voice of customer, not being well thought through. But there's very clear guidance written into or very clear expectations written to the regulations for 820, and generally all within section 30. And there's a very similar parallel in 1345, 2016, mm-hmm. Talking, using slightly different words, but basically saying the same thing.
And
it drives toward design inputs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, talking about CFR, right? 820?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Very good.
What is kind of interesting, and I would counsel anyone that's listening to us and finds the conversation interesting, and if they've not read it, there is a guidance document that the FDA put out, I think in like 97. I mean, it's old, but it's, think of it as kind of their, it's a non-binding guidance document. It's kind of like their interpretation of 820.
Okay.
Right? And say, these are what these things mean. And if you read the section that they wrote for design input, they go through all sorts of reasons why you should care.
Mm-hmm.
Why they care as regulators, but why you as a business should care about voice of customer and having this really sound user needs assessments to drive your design inputs.
Mm-hmm.
And in no uncertain terms, do they make it quite clear that this is like the single most important thing that you can do toward the success of your product is to invest time here. And it is very often the area that people skip,
mm-hmm.
right? They jump right into product development without, kind of thinking through VOC. If you're a big mature company, you identify a need in the market, you go talk to customers, you have marketing professionals that go and do all this work and say, okay, great, here's our market and customer requirements. And now you kind of take that and say, we think we want a product that meets these requirements, and you put that into your product development juggernaut and just have them spit something out in 18, 24, 36 months. But for an earlier stage company, they don't have those resources. And so they'll often just kind of jump right in, or even like a medium-sized company will often just jump right in into product development. And now you have a product that you're looking for, and you have to adapt it to kind of meet the customer needs rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some great guidance. There's some great examples in that documentation.
Okay.
To kind of read through and think about why does this really matter?
Okay. And to reiterate, that's an FDA guidance from 1997.
I can send you a link that you can share with folks, but it's,
it's
Design Control Guidance for Medical Device Manufacturers, March 11th, 1997. I was spot on.
Wow. Okay. All right. Very cool. Wow. That's written a long time ago.
Yeah, but you read it, it resonates.
Today.
I mean,
it's just
not rocket science.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. You just have to kind of read through and say, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
They still kind of take a narrow view here of customer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of weave my own take on that word in, but the rest of the story still stands.
Sure. So within the voice of the customer, are you including, you know, the, you said quality and contract manufacturing. And I think those contract manufacturing is like obvious in the customers I've worked with, because I see what happens a lot is they develop a really slick prototype and then, but they did that and the contract manufacturer can't manufacture it. It's not a manufacturable product. I mean, it sounds silly, but that happens a lot.
One of the ways that happens, you 3D print designs and you love the 3D printed design. Then you bring that to the contract manufacturer and you say, hey, yeah, we want to mold this because we want to make 3 million of them. And you're like, nope, that's you got undercuts. It's what you have designed for 3D printing does not, just because they're both plastic, does not lend itself automatically or automagically to being something that can be injection molded.
I hear you. So do you consider some of the other customer voices, like your regulatory, your reimbursement, your clinical team, your commercial team, some of those folks as well? Because it seems like those are often, that's where I'm spending a lot of my time, right? That's like my area of the product development cycle, is figuring out how all of those mesh together and bringing in those resources. And it seems like I see a lot of errors there as well, where maybe you made this prototype, it was manufacturable, you talked to the end user, the physician, whoever, the patients, but you completely, and you might even have brought in regulatory in, but you forgot about reimbursement, your clinical design, your commercial team who's supposed to sell this. And now you get this approved product, but no one wants to buy it. And you find yourself in this valley of death of, cool, I have an approved product, no one wants it.
Or they want to buy it, but as a business,
yeah,
it's not profitable for you to make enough of them because you didn't spend enough time thinking through, what kind of margins do we need? What's our initial, cost that we need to be able to have at what volumes, things like that.
Yeah. So you're proposing that they think about that at this very, very early stage, correct?
It's not going to hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important to think through it. It might mean that those user need requirements that go into the far left column of your trace matrix, it might be lighter with some of those groups, but I would rather have the conversations and have just, a few requirements there that might drive design decisions early, as opposed to, hear that voice later and then have the commercial team come back and say, what are you talking to cost 10 cents a consumable? This has to cost like 7 cents.
Yeah.
Or even if they say it has to cost 9 cents or we don't have a product. When you're talking about millions of consumables, a 9 cent product and a 10 cent product are very different products, and they eat into your margins and your profitability really quickly.
Right.
It's a challenge. I propose think as broadly as you can. Spend as much time with the end user in the use case environment that you intend it to be used in. Right. Mm-hmm. That's definitely where you want to put most of your eggs in that basket. But you should still talk to those other key stakeholders that are on the path to that end use case environment.
Okay. The other question I had, because this is our, looking at our other two topics, this is our really big, importance of the customer one. This is the only time we're going to talk about the voice of the customer. So the other one that I really wasn't aware of, and I really shouldn't have been, I shouldn't be, it's not like a surprise that I wasn't aware of this, but I was talking to a startup company who, I've talked to some robotic companies. Their end users are these big, large hospitals like the clinic, the Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, these like top tier institutes that are doing really advanced surgeries. But that's not most medical devices. Like most medical devices are innovative, but they're also going to be used by more than just those hospitals, right? So I was talking to them, and they said, you know, well, we spent time talking to physicians or end users there. We also spent a lot of time at community hospitals, and you know, the bulk of who might be using their device. Is that another area of like challenge that you see? Because I really had never thought of it. You know, you always see like, oh, go get your key opinion leaders, make sure they're, you know, then they're so-and-so at Harvard, so-and-so at Penn, or, you know, so-and-so at these really top institutions. But then you think, wow, the person, you know, like 80% of your market is not those hospitals, it's the community hospitals. So have you talked to people, have you talked to doctors and nurses and physicians at those places? Is that a place where you actually see a mistake? Because I wasn't aware of it. So I've only heard one person talk about it, and just curious if you see it as well.
Well, I mean, I think your intuition is right there. I mean, it's a business decision, really, right? Like, what is the market segment you intend to sell into? Sometimes you don't want to use the same device for all resources. You want to use slight perturbations of the design and have them be different devices for different price points or for different use case environments and things like that. But I guess what we could say with a broad brush stroke, if the intended use environment encapsulates a wide swath of potential users, you don't want to swing to either one of the extremes and only talk to those folks. I mean, you should value diversity in representation, really in everything that we do, but definitely in voice of customer solicitation, making sure that you're talking to not just KOLs. Because they'll have a very specific mindset. And I have seen products that were developed, I won't go into any details, but I have absolutely seen products that were developed with a lot of KOL influence. And then you end up developing a product that specifically meets them and what they want, and does not meet the rest of the market, like 90% of the market, because they wanted very specific features to be able to do specific kind of research or specific kind of work. Whereas the rest of the market just needs, you know, less. They need something a little bit different. I've seen it come back and bite people.
Yeah. And that sounds like that's probably the difference between just a really cool product or an expensive hobby, as I call it, and an actual business. So I appreciate that background. Is there anything else I've missed or you wanted to touch on about the importance of voice of the customer?
Let's dwell on a couple tips and challenges.
Okay.
You asked me to think about that earlier. I think when you're going out, it's scary. How do I go out and talk to people and get feedback? And you're going to have to overcome that and figure out a way to do it. If your team is big enough that you have marketing professionals, like strategic marketing professionals, that's what they do. And you know, use them and let them do their job and value their input. But when you do go out, I think it's important that you record everything. And I mean like video and audio recordings. If it's written feedback from folks, you write it down. Record everything that you possibly can in whatever way that you can manage that.
Okay.
Because there's always an interpretation step, right? The customers, you talk to 30 people, they're not all going to say the exact same thing. They might say things around similar themes. So you might get, you know, talk to 100 folks, you get 30% of them, you know, are telling you some very specific feedback around their expectations that the system is 21 CFR Part 11 compliant or something like that. And say, okay, that's really clear. They might have all used that word, but they might not use that terminology. They might say, we wanted to make sure that the electronic records that are generated are safe and secure. So it's good to record everything so you can go back and parse through it. And you can do some affinity mapping to say, okay, well, what Dwayne said was this, but he's really touching on this theme. which is also what Sally and Raphael all said as well. You know, there's a way for you to kind of quantify, you know, how much feedback were you getting from users on those specific things? Because you're going to get a lot of feedback. And in some cases, you're going to get divergent feedback. Mm-hmm. It tells you, I want you to go this way and people go this way. And how do you make that decision? So if you record it all, it's nice to be able to do some modeling on the information and try to figure out what's there. Okay. The other piece of feedback I have, especially if, you know, you're talking to these end case, these end users and customers in the environment, unlike what I'm doing in this podcast, do as little talking as possible and do as much listening as possible, right? Just ask open probing questions, you know, open-ended questions, and just let it be and let them just keep talking and giving you feedback. Mm-hmm. And keep asking, you know, well, how do you feel about that? And why is that important to you? And just let them talk. A lot of times we don't. So a couple tips there, just record everything, because from a data analytics perspective, you can do a ton of work with it rather than saying, well, I spoke to a bunch of surgeons. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, where is that documented? Where is that feedback? How do I know that's really what they were saying? It's good to get that reduced, you know, into writing at some point. A couple challenges I think that end up happening, especially if you were to embrace this kind of idea of exploding out what a customer is that different customer segments will use different terminology. And you have to be really careful as you parse through their feedback to make sure that two people might say the same word, but they mean different things because of their environment, right? Like a patient isn't going to use the same words that a clinician is going to use, right? Mm-hmm. Clinician's going to use much more medically heavy words, whereas the patient's going to use, you know, not a heavy medical vernacular. So pay close attention to the terminology that they use, and don't necessarily just assume that when someone says this and someone over here says this, that it means the same thing, right? Don't just make a Pareto chart of how many times did someone say that one word, because that one word might mean something different to different groups. So that's kind of a challenge I see, that not everyone that's giving you this voice of customer speaks the same language. And then we touched on this narrow view challenge already, so I don't need to go into that so much. But the third challenge I want to touch on is design engineers and scientists are absolutely the worst person, the worst people to be providing this voice of customer input. And I'm in that group, and I will challenge that we are the worst. We'll jump to conclusions. We'll imagine that the broader population thinks of things the same way that we do. We'll think, oh, well, yeah, this will be really easy. Of course it's easy. You just do this and do this and do this and do this and do this. It's super easy. Well, yeah, to you. Mm-hmm. But far too often you'll see voice of customer requirements written down. And I like to go through and say, what's the source of this sentence you came up with? Where does this user need come from? And if you could point me to all these different interviews that you did and surveys that you got, and here's all this input, that's great. But if you point me to, well, you know, Rodrigo over here, you know, they thought it would make it really easy if everything was, you could do everything with one hand. It's like, okay, well, that's great. Well, where's the validation? Where's the voice of customer? That's not voice of customer, that's voice of engineer, right? Or voice of scientist. So we are absolutely the wrong people. So if you see user needs or voice of customer kind of statements, and the origin of it comes from the development team itself, red flag that one, because mm-hmm. that really needs to be pressure tested. Because I would argue in almost all cases we're wrong. Mm-hmm. There's a good example that shows up a lot, because I do a lot in vitro diagnostic space. So a lot of assay dev, and very often I'll come across situations where the requirement is that you pipette, you know, certain volumes of things in certain to certain places, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, the the process, PhD level scientists came up with it and they've been doing it forever and say, oh yeah, it's really easy. You just pipette this here and just do it really quick. Multi-channel pipette, boom, you go. But when you scale that product and you intend to sell it and have other people follow the same process, now you have lesser skilled technicians. You have folks that might be working night shifts. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of complexity that gets introduced and you can't just simply say, well, it's easy to pipette, right?
Right.
No, it's actually not. There's a lot of skill to pipetting. Mm-hmm. Do you touch the sidewall? Do you not touch the sidewall? Do you pipette from above? How do you deal with static? There's just so much that you take for granted because you know it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the person to talk to, right?
Right.
She's not the person whose input you want to be driving voice of customer.
Yeah.
Talk to the night shift folks.
Right. Yeah, I know. I had this conversation with a company back when I was with my previous employer before I'm at LabCorp here. And they had pitched this product to me and I was like, oh, I mean, in my mind, it sounds amazing. Like it sounds so cool. And I guarantee if I go tell my parents about it or my wife or anyone who's not intimately familiar with medical device, it's not that cool of a product and they're not going to use something like that. It was supposed to be like a product that any person can use. And I was like, no one's going to want to use that. They're just not, and maybe eventually they will. And that could be like, it's like, I always liken it's like cryptocurrency. Like cryptocurrency is something that for most people, including myself, sometimes it's hard for me to like wrap my head around, right? Some of my friends are like, they love it and they've explained it to me and I have a much better understanding of it now, but, and maybe it is the future. I'm not, it could very well be, but I am willing to bet that most people right now don't understand it and they're not going to use it because it's just, they don't understand it. So like it could be a poor example, but I think it's a good example in terms of what we're talking about here. Yeah. I think that wraps it up, Devin. At least for part one of three. Look, I appreciate your time. Hang on for 1 minute. I'll stop the recording here. And I look forward to part two of three, which will be building your team and infrastructure for success.
Yeah, now you have a path of where you want to go. How are you going to do it?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.